Okay, let's just state it. AI, it's not some far-off thing anymore, is it? It's here. It's reshaping pretty much everything, our jobs, how we think. But the question is, do we really get it? Like, what is AI actually doing right now? And maybe more importantly, what do we want it to do? Where is all this heading? So today we're doing a deep dive. We've got this fantastic collection of sources from Nexus, exploring the frontiers of intelligence, issue 13. And it draws on some really diverse perspectives. We're talking Stanford University research, stuff from popular mechanics, Psychology Today, Rude Baguette, One Useful Thing, Fast Company, a real mix.
Yeah, quite a lineup. And our mission really is to pull out the key insights for you to help you navigate all these complex, like even conflicting ideas about AI and, well, human intelligence too. We want to give you a clear, kind of concise picture of this landscape because honestly, it's evolving so fast. Think of this as your essential guide to understanding where intelligence itself might be going.
Okay, so a good place to start seems to be us humans. How do we actually want to use AI, like day to day in our jobs? It's more than just will robots take our jobs, right? It's about how work itself changes. So let's unpack that, this burning question. What do workers really want from AI?
It's absolutely crucial. And there's some really interesting Stanford University research on this. It just came out July 7th, 2025. It's from their Institute for Human-Centered AI and the Digital Economy Lab. They surveyed, I think it was 52 AI experts across all sorts of jobs. And they also talked to 52 AI experts. So you get both sides.
Right, the people using it and the people building it. So what did they find? What's the big takeaway?
Well, the really striking thing, I mean, it jumped right out, was that people overwhelmingly want AI to automate the boring stuff, you know, the repetitive tasks, the grunt work. But this is a big but, Tema. They absolutely want to keep control. They want oversight. They want to be the ones making the final calls, the important decisions.
Okay, so automate the tedious bits, but keep humans in the loop for the important stuff.
Exactly. And what's fascinating is the mismatch. There's a gap right now between that desire, what workers want, and what current AI is, well, really good at or focused on. The research also points to a big shift coming in job skills. Less emphasis on, say, raw data analysis, because AI will do more of that,
Yeah.
and much more emphasis on things like interpersonal skills, problem solving, emotional intelligence, the human stuff.
That makes a lot of sense. So AI handles the data, we handle the nuance, the interaction.
Precisely. It's really a call to develop AI as a tool for augmentation, you know, helping us do our jobs better, not just replacing tasks wholesale. It highlights what people actually value in their work.
Okay, so that's the practical on the ground view. Let's shift gears now to the really big ambition, artificial general intelligence, AGI, achieving human-level intelligence, or maybe something beyond. Our sources here seem to have some pretty different takes on how close we are, or even what AGI looks like.
Oh, definitely. It gets complex fast. Psychology Today, for instance, throws out this really provocative term, anti-intelligence.
Anti-intelligence, what do they mean by that?
Well, they're looking at current large language models, LLMs, and
Yeah.
saying, look, these things are amazing pattern matchers. They can mimic human language, human thought, incredibly well. But it's mimicry. It's stateless, pattern-based mimicry, as they put it. There's no underlying symbolic reasoning like humans use, no continuous sense of self, no real understanding. It looks like thought, but it's maybe hollow, hence anti-intelligence.
Huh. Like a reflection in a mirror looks real, but isn't actually there.
Kind of, yeah. But then you contrast that with someone like Nathan Myhrvold, the Microsoft AI pioneer. He's quoted in Rude Baguette saying something pretty bold.
Oh, yeah. What's it say?
Basically, we only need a few more miracles to get to human-level intelligence, suggesting it's much closer than maybe many people think.
Miracles? That sounds a bit like wishful thinking, doesn't it? Did they explain what these miracles might be?
Well, it's more about the pace of progress, I think. But Popular Mechanics actually details one potential miracle, or maybe better put, a potential breakthrough. They talk about adding a higher dimension to AI.
A higher dimension. Okay, unpack that for us.
Right now, think of neural networks, the basis of most AI, as being kind of flat. They have width and depth, processing information in, let's say, two dimensions. This new concept proposes adding height. It involves things like interlayer links, feedback loops. Think of it like the way our own brains have all these complex lateral connections, not just linear pathways.
Okay, so making the internal structure more complex, more brain-like.
Exactly. The idea is this could foster better decision-making, improved memory, maybe even something like intuitive understanding, allowing AI to potentially relate concepts, reflect on outputs, refine things in a more human-like way.
Interesting. So moving beyond just pattern matching.
Potentially, yes. But even with that kind of advance, psychology today kind of pushes back again. They argue true AGI isn't just about making current models bigger or adding a dimension. They say it needs a fundamental structural shift. It requires integrating that scalable pattern processing AI is good at with human-like continuity and reasoning, combining the two approaches. And this whole debate, it leads to a really fundamental, almost philosophical question. Is our way of thinking, human cognition, even necessary for higher intelligence?
Wow, okay. That's a big one. Is human thought the only path, or even the best path, to intelligence? Let's explore that.
Well, futurist John Nosta, again in Psychology Today, puts forward a pretty startling idea. His research, or his interpretation of current AI, suggests that these systems are already showing signs of intelligence without the things we usually associate with thinking. You know, internal narratives, conscious awareness, human-like memory processes.
So intelligence without consciousness, without inner monologue.
That's the implication. And Nosta takes it a step further. He posits that maybe, just maybe, our kind of cognition, the way humans think, isn't the ultimate peak of intelligence. Maybe it's just a transient phase in how intelligence can develop.
Whoa, a transient phase, like training wheels for intelligence?
Sort of. He's suggesting AI might be evolving beyond needing to replicate human thought, heading towards a form of intelligence that transcends our cognitive processes rather than just copying them. It really challenges our whole definition of knowing or thinking.
Okay, my head's spinning a little bit here. If our way of thinking might just be a phase, what does that mean for us, for our brains, our abilities in this AI age? How do we, you know, stay sharp? How do we protect what makes us human?
That's exactly the right question. An AI expert, Ethan Mollick, tackles this directly. He wrote a piece called Against Brain Damage.
Brain damage? That sounds alarming. Is AI literally damaging our brains?
No. He's quick to clarify. It's not literal brain damage, thank goodness. But he warns that the unthoughtful application of AI can seriously hinder our own cognitive abilities. We can get mentally lazy, essentially.
How so? Like relying on GPS instead of learning routes?
Exactly like that, but a potentially broader. He gives examples like in education. If students just rely on AI for answers constantly, they might not actually acquire the knowledge themselves. Their learning process is short-circuited. Or think about creative work. If you immediately ask AI for ideas, you might get anchored to its suggestions and stop exercising your own unique ideation muscles. You kind of outsource your initial thinking.
Yeah, I can see that. It's easy to just ask the AI.
It is. So Mollick's advice is pretty straightforward. Think first. Write first, meet first. Basically, engage your own brain before turning to the AI. Preserve those thinking habits. And if you zoom out, this ties into what Nexus calls the cognitive preservation imperative. It's this idea that we actively need to make sure we don't let our core mental skills atrophy, the very skills that, you know, drove all human progress up to now.
Think first. That's a good mantra. So preserve our thinking. But maybe there's another uniquely human advantage. You mentioned emotional intelligence earlier. Could our emotions be key?
That's a fascinating angle, and Dr. Zorana Ivcevic-Pringle, a researcher at Yale, argues exactly that in Fast Company. She really challenges the old-school idea that emotions have no place in professional settings. You know, leave your feelings at the door. She says, no, emotions are actually valuable data. They provide information that can fuel creativity and innovation.
Interesting. How does that work? Like, being angry helps you innovate.
Well, maybe not anger directly, but different emotional states can be useful for different tasks. She suggests, for example, that positive moods might be better for brainstorming, for generating lots of new ideas, whereas maybe more critical or even slightly negative moods could be better for refining ideas, revising work, finding flaws. It's about harnessing the information in the emotion.
Okay, so understanding your emotional state and using it strategically.
Exactly. And she stresses that leaders who understand this, who have high emotional intelligence, are way better at creating work environments where creativity actually flourishes. It connects right back to this idea that maybe our emotions, our ability to feel and interpret feelings, could be our last remaining advantage over purely logical machines, especially in creative fields. It's part of that soulful essence of human nature.
That phrase, soulful essence of human nature, that really resonates. It brings us back to some of the deeper questions raised by David Espindola in that Nexus issue, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. He points out that, yeah, machines are getting incredibly good at pattern recognition, optimization, processing data at speeds we can't imagine. But there are things, he argues, they simply cannot replicate. That soulful essence you mentioned, consciousness as we experience it, our drive to find meaning, things like spiritual intelligence, intuition. that sort of ineffable quality that makes us human.
The things you can't really quantify or code.
Precisely. And Espindola, it's clear, you know, industries will change, jobs will be redefined, the nature of work itself is in flux. That's undeniable.
But the message from him, and really the overall tone in Nexus, isn't fear. It's more like curiosity, optimism even. It's about figuring out our unique place alongside this powerful new technology.
Yeah, approaching it with an open mind, ready to adapt and find where our human strengths truly lie.
Wow. We've covered a lot of ground here. It's been quite a journey for this deep dive. Yeah. We went from what people want from AI in their jobs day to day.
Right, the practical stuff, that Stanford study.
All the way to these huge questions about AGI, the different paths, whether human-like thinking is even the goal.
The anti-intelligence idea, the higher dimensions.
Yeah, and then landing on how we preserve our own thinking and maybe how our emotions, our very soulfulness, become even more important.
It really does circle back, doesn't it? It underscores that central idea. Understanding where intelligence is going, both artificial and human, is just essential. It's key if you want to thrive in whatever world is coming next.
Absolutely. So maybe the final thought to leave you, the listener, with is this. As AI keeps evolving, keeps changing our world, what part of your unique intelligence will you lean into most? That part the machines can't replicate, is it your creativity, your empathy, your ability to connect ideas, to find meaning, something to think about, keep exploring, keep asking questions?